The State Administration and Technology Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Michelle, please call the roll.
Chair Stevenson?
Here.
Vice Chair Maggard?
Here.
Ranking Member Golf Marcio? Representatives Barrero?
Here.
Campbell?
Here.
Dugan?
Here.
Fabricio? Fisher? Gilombardo?
Here.
Henson? McCurdy? Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Overdorff?
Yes, ma'am.
Robinson? Sabatini?
Here.
We have a quorum, Madam Chair.
Thank you. A quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone to the State Administration and Technology Appropriations Subcommittee. I want to remind you to turn your cell phone and other communication devices to off or on silent mode. Good morning, members. We have two bills up today, and we have quite a bit of public comment on the, at least on the first bill. So we'll be moving along and trying to make sure everybody gets plenty of an opportunity to speak. Representative McClure, you are recognized to present House Bill 741, CS for House Bill 741.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Under House Bill 741, net metering, the PSC must propose a revised net metering rule for investor-owned utilities by January 1, 2023. The proposed rule must ensure that net metering customers pay the full cost of electric service and are not subsidized by the general body of ratepayers. The bill allows any IOU customer who owns or leases renewable generation that is in service before January 1, 2023 to continue to use the current net metering rate design for 20 years. For the purposes of this committee, the bill has no fiscal impact on state or local government revenues or expenditures, but an indeterminate fiscal impact on the private sector is possible. That is the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I see no amendments on the bill. Members, we're ready for your questions. Any members in questions? Ranking Member Goff Marcel, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a lot of questions on this bill. There's been a lot of pushback on it. Right now, how much solar energy are we producing as a state?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are you specifically talking about rooftop solar or solar in total, including, you know, the fields that we see?
Both.
So rooftop solar is 1%. I haven't studied the total amount, but 1% is about 1%, 0.8% is rooftop solar.
Okay, 1%. And then, you're recognized. Yes, right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay. And how much is that actually affecting the customers as far as the ones that don't have solar?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just want to make sure I'm answering your question. You're referring to what is the cost to those non-rooftop solar customers?
Right.
For round numbers, it's about $100 million per 1% of penetration.
Can you repeat that, please?
It's about $100 million generally for every 1% of rooftop solar generation, which is referred to in the industry as penetration.
Thank you. Further?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So could you, in layman terms, explain what that means to an everyday electric customer?
Yeah, absolutely. So today, it's dependent on service area, you know, so one IOU may have a different kind of set of rates, but somewhere between, I would say, 10 and 20 cents today. But when we look out at the growth forecast and look at other states, if it went unbridled, you'd be talking about significant, meaningful dollar amounts per month. I don't want to suggest what those exactly tie to, because it would be a function of when we got to that penetration. I'd point to states like California, though, right, which is at 13 or 14% penetration, and they're contemplating billions of dollars of cost shift, which is truly meaningful to the ratepayers that don't have rooftop solar, you know, $5, $10 per month. So this bill attempts to never get to that point. I think one last thing I would leave you with, I was hoping to have a really substantive policy amendment that kind of goes to, I think, your line of questioning as it relates to, you know, do we have a problem today versus are we going to have a problem tomorrow? in all of my conversations with stakeholders, I haven't had one rooftop solar advocate tell me that eventually we will have what they even consider to be a significant cost share. The negotiations have been great with stakeholders, and at the next policy stop, we will prescribe a glide path that hopefully has everyone quite comfortable with not displacing the rooftop solar industry today, while also ensuring we don't have a huge cost shift sometime in the future.
You want
to? We have. When, do you? Have
I might
question?
Have another question, sure, but I want to give other people a chance. Thank you.
Representative Robinson, you're recognized.
I think he just clarified the question that I was going to ask. So basically, it's saying that you're kind of, this particular legislation will keep things standard where it is, but it's kind of looking out for the future so that we don't have an increase or a problem, like you stated something about California, and I did read that article, but that it will balance it out, kind of.
I want to make sure I understand your question.
Well, my question is, he kind of alluded to.
I think I understand.
Did you?
Yes, ma'am.
Just can you just restate your question, please?
I want to make sure that I'm clear that this legislation is not going to change the industry now, but it's kind of looking at what's going to happen in the future and trying to make sure that we're at a balanced rate at then.
I'm going to just. So are you concerned about the impact to the
people,
the customers?
Exactly, because in my community, solar is not that popular. And my concern is to how their rate is going to be affected now and later.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for that clarification. You're
sure.
Right.
So just to be clear, the bill as it sits before you in this committee today is not prescribing a glide path. It would be an immediate reduction to those rates. What I am saying is in the next policy stop, where we historically have made significant policy changes, we don't typically do that in an appropriations committee, there is a glide path that goes, goes out for a period of years and contemplates over 300 hours of stakeholder meetings, quite frankly, and I'd love to get with you to go through those details, but the thesis behind that glide path is to make sure, first and foremost, that the ratepayers of Florida don't feel a cost shift the way that California is feeling it, while also allowing rooftop solar to adjust their business model to not be dependent on a subsidy to make their business model work.
Thank you. Representative Fabrizio, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And you've touched on my question a little bit, but I just want to clarify. What can be done to ensure that, you know, rooftop solar goes forward but provides zero subsidies from the non-rooftop homes?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So there's several different ways to ensure there's a zero subsidy, and I'm going to get technical, but a term called net billing, which is the frequency in which they net, would be a way. But the bottom line is, you know, rooftop solar, I believe, will be a part of our long-term solutions, but it cannot ride on the backs of the other ratepayers indefinitely, right? So, the short answer is net billing. Another way to look at it is you could remove the mandate away for the utilities to have to buy back that. So not change the rates, not change the frequency in which we measure this out via net billing, but just simply remove the mandate, and then the utilities would buy it on an as-needed basis, not unlike how they purchase power when they're deficient at other times, right? So there's several ways to do it, but net billing is probably the most prevalent. And one last thing I'd add, in other states where they've done that, it hasn't been the demise of rooftop solar. We've seen it in places like Hawaii, who admittedly have much higher energy costs, but it doesn't mean it's the end. I think it's the sudden shift that doesn't allow the model to adjust. So that's why we've taken a look at a glide path, and hopefully we'll have one for the next stop.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Overdorf. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. Representative, I'm trying to keep, obviously being a fiscal committee, trying to keep it towards the appropriations, but do have a couple of questions. First of all, as you look at this policy, is net metering, as it stands today, a regressive policy?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would say yes. I mean, fundamentally, you have folks that have homes that they don't own. Think renters, right? So rooftop solar is, is put on houses that are on residential properties or homes that the folks own. And so you would, as a renter, not have that flexibility because you don't own it. And presumably you will be participating in that cost share. So for that reason alone, and I could maybe frame out some others, but that would maybe be the most obvious one that sticks out.
Additional question?
Thank you. Just one other question. Does the bill itself, does it apply to municipal utilities like Tallahassee or like Gainesville regional utilities? Does the bill apply to them?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, it specifically applies to investor-owned utilities.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Higgins, you're recognized. Henson, I'm sorry, I wrote it down wrong too, Representative. I'm so sorry. Representative Henson. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Representative Henson.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. Sorry I entered late, so I'm not sure what you've covered and what you have not. It's my understanding that your bill primarily is to change the retail rate of net metering to a more wholesale rate. Is that correct?
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I would say that is maybe a way that we are going to do what I'm trying to do, which is ensure that the ratepayers of Florida don't subsidize rooftop solar. So there's not a huge cost shift from rooftop solar to non-rooftop solar residential customers down the road.
Your response implies that you're saying customers without solar are subsidizing rooftop customers.
You're
Is that what you just said?
You're right.
Yes, ma'am. Yep. I hope I didn't imply it. That's exactly what I meant to say.
Okay, good. So I did hear you say,
Representative Henson, you are recognized.
Thank you for getting my name right. You did say that solar customers are riding on the backs of other users. That's what you imply? Well, that's what I meant by implication.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess it's a separate way of framing it. What I would say is, and not out of all of the stakeholder meetings I've had on this, not one advocate for rooftop solar has insinuated that there isn't a cost shift associated with this. Mm. Not one. Now, what the argument will be, in fairness, this shouldn't come as a blindside, they'll say, well, it's so small today. What's it really matter? And quite frankly, in 2008, when this was put into motion, they contemplated that as well. We're at 0.8% penetration. We know that we don't exactly have a problem until we get above 10%, that compounding effect, 10% penetration. So we have a ways to go there. I'm uncertain if you were here, but I'll just risk repeating it again, that I have a substantive policy amendment that will be presented at the next stop that prescribes a glide path over a longer period of time, whereas the bill as drafted today is an immediate fix to ensure that we don't have this problem down the road. One could argue it's too heavy-handed and too swift and doesn't give rooftop solar the ability to adjust. So I look forward to presenting that amendment. I wish we could be talking about that today, but it is an appropriations committee, and that's why it's not included.
One more, Representative Henson.
I'm glad to hear you say that. Thank you, Madam Chair. Do we have any data? Has there been a study to show, you know where I'm headed? Has there been any data or study to show that solar users or non-solar users are paying more money because of solar users?
You are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, the PSC has looked at it. It's a very small amount. Again, I think going back to the original line of questions, 10 to 20 cents per month, 5 cents per month, it's dependent on surface area. It's a very small amount today, but it will not be a very small amount when we cross 10% and start getting to 13, 15% penetration, which presumably is what the Sunshine State will do.
Thank you. I want to, is there any other questions? Representative, Ranking Member Goff Marcel, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was told the way it works, and I just want you to verify this for me, is that the rooftop solar customer generates the power that they need and whatever else goes back to the grid. And then if they need more power, then the power company charges them three times as much as they gave them a subsidy for when they gave them the power back. Is that the right amount?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think maybe some concepts within how it works have maybe been collaged there. So how it works today is, and I'll use hypotheticals. If you generate 1,500 kilowatt hours of rooftop solar energy, but you only use 1,000, you're credited on a one-to-one basis. That 500 excess that you generated rolls over to the next month and can be debited. At the end of the year, on an annualized basis, it is netted out. So although on a monthly basis you're not getting compensated, and you know, i.e. they send you a check, it is crediting against your next month. At the end of the year, whatever the net is, and it's important to realize that rooftop solar systems are sized supposedly to be about 90% of what your annual capacity should be. So you shouldn't be going over, but sometimes you do, and that's okay. You're compensated on that annualized basis at the avoided cost rate, right? Now, I think I have that right. If I don't have that right, I'll come back to you. There's three different tiers. I'm pretty sure it's avoided cost at the end of the year, but it's full retail month over month, right? But where it starts to get tricky is you're generating this power oftentimes, and rooftop solar advocates will, and installers will tell you this, typically during the middle of the day or off-peak. The utilities are mandated to bring that power online. They don't have a choice to purchase it or not purchase it, whether they need it or not, and oftentimes they don't. And so now you have a surplus, and that's where you start to have the compounding effect, and that cost swells out, if that makes sense. Which, going back to an earlier question, is why I said one of the ways you could presumably do away with the subsidy is just take the mandate out of it, right? And, you know, the utilities wouldn't be required or mandated to buy that back in real time, only on an as-needed basis.
Representative Campbell, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I did. And thank you for the presentation of this bill. My question is, how does this impact smaller businesses that may be in the solar industry currently? Will they see a hit to their businesses? Will this cripple them? What does that look like?
Representative Campbell, is that a question you don't have an answer to?
No.
Okay. All right. I want to make sure everybody gets up, and then we'll have time for debate as well. So thank you.
That was a question. Okay, I wasn't debating.
Thanks for the question. We see in other states where they've taken the words that are pretty much or synonymous with this bill, and those businesses have continued on. I have no doubt that throughout public testimony, everyone will stand up and say this will be the end of rooftop solar in the state. Which is why I think it's important to keep reflecting on what's to come with this prescribed glide path, because I think that levels out. But for me to speculate on if rooftop solar would go out of business, I would have to look at places like Nevada, where when they enacted this law, some 2 years later, they came back and undid it because it was too immediate. They didn't glide path. But then you look at places like Hawaii and other states where they've continued to grow. I don't know where Florida fits in the picture there. I would have to assume that this is a pretty green pasture to harvest solar here in our state. So I probably lean towards they wouldn't go out of business, but I think we should take a deeper approach or a deeper look into how we kind of transition from where we're at today to where we want to make sure we get to.
Representative Hintz, did you have another question? Representative Campbell.
Just a follow up. If you touched on this, I do apologize, but where are we in this process? Are we more in the mature stage? Are we still in the premature stage? I'm just trying to figure out where we at in regards to your statement that you said.
I'm going to ask him a clarifying question. Are you talking about in the process of the bill, the process of rooftop solar?
Just in our solar system.
Well, I think it depends on where, I mean, that's a little bit of in the eye of the beholder, right? I mean, they've been at it since 2008 and got to 0.8% penetration. I don't know if you define that as mature or immature, but they've had quite a while to get going. Now, in fairness to rooftop solar, technology has rapidly improved. Prices have come down, become more affordable. So I think that's why we're contemplating this now. We can kind of look to a place like California, who's presumably 5 or 8 years ahead of us. I mean, they're having significant problems, and it's not a political problem. Right, it's a real cost shift. There are real dollars being shifted from rooftop solar folks to non-rooftop solar folks. So we're trying to avoid that.
We have quite a bit of public testimony. I want to be sure we have time for that. I have another member who the question, Representative Duggan. You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, recognizing, of course, that you're not actually presenting the amendment today, and I agree why you're not. This is not a policy committee. Can you give us just a 30-second high-level summary of what the amendment will encompass?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, so we look out, there's a lot of dates in my head, but 5 or so years, maybe 6 years, backstopped by that penetration rate. So we're glide pathing over that time, reducing off of the retail rate as we go. We contemplate things like financing. 80% of the market is financed. So how do they have predictability and certainty that rates aren't jumping all over the board? With a final tier looking very similar to this bill, where they'll go before the PSC to look at market conditions and where we're at, and then determine what, you know, how we're going to conduct rooftop solar in this state for years to come.
Thank you. Representative Hinson, you have another question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two, I'm going to put them together and see if you can. Are you trying to end retail net metering or end net metering altogether? And has there been a study made to show us the impact and get a grip on solar users, net metering, and the industry?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not trying to do net metering, I'm trying to avoid a huge cost shift to the ratepayers of Florida. That's my thesis for this bill. I don't believe folks that do not have rooftop solar should pay a higher bill as a function of their neighbor having a rooftop solar system. So that answers the first portion. Representative, there's been study after study after study. It's in the eye of the beholder, and you better dig deep as to who's doing the research and who's doing the study. But we don't have to run from the assumption that there is going to be a cost shift in this state. There was a zero cost shift in 2008. There's approximately $100 million cost shift today. The good news is, at the end of this glide path, should it be amended onto this bill, everyone will get to go to the PSC and have a robust conversation about it. But the goal, and I want to be crystal clear about this, is that there will be a zero subsidy to non-rooftop solar ratepayers in this state.
Thank you. I want to just ask, just for clarity, because some people are watching and may not be clear, that customers that also have rooftop solar now, this bill does not change their arrangement other than saying they had the same arrangement for 20 years. Is that correct?
Correct. They're grandfathered. We amended that in the last stop. It was at 10 years, I believe. We moved it out to 20 years.
Okay.
The thesis behind that was folks had made financial decisions to go ahead and install rooftop solar, and the payoff period for a system paid in cash is, let's just say, approximately 10 years. It's usually a hair bit less, but 10 years. And then for a finance system, it's 16 to 18 years. So 20 years gave me a lot of comfort that these folks weren't, you know, their financial plans weren't going to be displaced.
Thank you. I appreciate your time and effort to answer these questions. We're going to move on to, I beg your pardon, Representative McCurdy, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. Representative McClure, over the weekend, I went back and watched the first committee stop that this bill went. You assured my colleagues that you will work with both parties, both interested parties, to come up with a compromise. And I just want to know, has that happened?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I sure hope so, Representative McCurdy. I think so. We'll see. The draft isn't completely done, but hopefully it is here very, very soon. And then we'll sit down with the stakeholders and go through it again. But conceptually, yes. Yes, it was agreed to by both parties. I don't want to commit to the words on the paper because I haven't seen the final draft either. But conceptually, yes. I believe at the last committee stop, and I owe those colleagues of ours an apology, I had forgotten that I was coming through a sub-approps next where we don't do substantive policy change, which is why we don't have it here. The good news is it allowed us to work on it a little bit more. And I feel really good about the product. I think it strikes a fantastic balance. So we'll have conversations between now and the next committee stop to make sure the words on the paper are what we agreed to conceptually.
Thank you, members. And unfortunately, with this being an appropriations committee, we generally do not hear amendments on the substantive nature of bills. So I appreciate all the questions. And I know that the members want to be responsible to their constituents, and this is a unique opportunity to get those questions. But now we're going to go to public comment because we've got people that have come from a long distance to speak. I'll call you up two at a time. Some people will be waving in support. Some people will be speaking. And we are asking people to hold themselves to 1 minute so we can be sure and get everybody up. First, we have Lowell Collins representing himself. Mr. Collins, do you wish to speak?
Wave in opposition.
Lowell Collins waves in opposition. Marion Knowles. Marion Knowles waves in opposition. Michelle Rutledge, St. Peter, St. Paul Community Council, waves in opposition. Barbara Devane from Florida Now and Florida Alliance for Retired Americans is an opponent and waves in opposition. Is that correct? Okay. Karen Woodall from Earth Justice waves in opposition. Garrett Wallace from the Nature Conservancy waves in opposition. Ida Escamani from Florida Rising waves in opposition. Pamela Birch Fort waves in opposition. Adam Basford, Associated Industry of Florida, waves in support. Sterling Clifford wishes to speak. And Clifford Sterling, you're recognized. You'd be followed by Justin Vandenbroek. You're recognized, Mr. Sterling.
Thank you. My name's Sterling Clifford. I'm the Government Affairs Manager for Sunnova Energy. We're a residential rooftop solar company based out of Houston. Our operation in Florida is 16, soon to be 17, Florida-based independent dealers. First, I want to compliment Representative McClure. He certainly has been open to negotiation and discussion about this bill. It's something we appreciate, and we appreciate his effort on that front. I do have to testify against the bill as it is, given that we are here hearing the bill as it is, and we believe the bill would be destructive for the residential solar industry in Florida. There's a lot of discussion about the existence or size of the cost shift, and I just want to point out that there is a venue for utilities to identify and pursue rate increases related to costs, and that's a rate case, and they all make them, some very recently for billions of dollars. Never has there been a line item in a rate case identifying the amount of a cost shift or laying out the math behind what those cost shift numbers are. There's a place for them to do that. They've never done it, which raises the question of how big a cost shift is and if a cost shift exists in the first place. If there was, it would have been identified at some point. It never has been by a Florida utility or by a utility anywhere else in the country. So we don't believe this bill is necessary. We believe it'll cost jobs in Florida, and we urge you to vote against it.
You're recognized, Mr. Representative Duggan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You've heard Representative McClure's estimate of what the cost shift is. Do you disagree with his number or his methodology?
I haven't seen any methodology. That's the real issue, is that the utilities often present these numbers without the same level of detail that they apply to other costs when they present them in rate cases. The number. I have nothing to draw any conclusions about the validity of a number.
Thank you, Mr. Clifford. And I'm sure that Mr. McClure, Representative McClure, will address some of those issues in his closing after debate. Lauren Jackson, beg your pardon. Another bill. Justin Vandenbroek, Florida Solar Energy Industries Association, you are recognized.
Thank you all very much. It's glad to be here. Representative, Mr. Strawberry Shortcake, it's nice to see you. I appreciate everybody's time here today. This is a bill that's near and dear to my heart. I've worked in the solar industry for the past 12 years, and you could say I kind of grew up in it. I started installing solar panels at 20 years old here in Tallahassee, installed solar on Bella Bella, a bunch of different restaurants and businesses in the city. And so it's taken me everywhere in this world. And in addition to founding my own company in Central Florida that employs 50 people, that's tremendously concerned about this bill and will certainly have to curb some of our employees. I'm also the president of our Florida Solar Energy Industries Association. So I get the pleasure of every night talking to solar contractors who are extremely concerned about this bill. The beautiful thing about solar is it's math and science. So you just plug a bunch of numbers in and you say, okay, this is the bill. It says avoided cost, or it says instantaneous netting or monthly netting or all these different factors of the reform. And then you get your output and that's the payback period. And then you can say, hey, when's the last time that we've had this payback period in the state of Florida? And you can find out that as the bill started, which it's not there today, but as it started, it was going to send us back a decade to where the payback period in Florida was over 18 years. And simply our workforce can't support that. So that's why it's very important that we be very methodical. We've appreciated the opportunity to work with him on this, but there's certain terminologies in the bill, like avoided cost, that just doesn't have a place to be. Avoided cost doesn't consider transmission and distribution of electricity. So there's some nuances there. Also, interestingly, I mean, we just got approval last week from the Florida Department of Education, which I think this committee will be excited about, for a Florida, I haven't told you yet, a Florida Solar Apprenticeship Program. And it's now approved by the state of Florida. And it's a workforce development program to provide opportunities for people to get into the trade and learn how to be solar workers. This is the fifth fastest growing occupation in the nation. Florida's the second largest producer of solar jobs in the country. So we have a lot to be proud of here in the state. We are not even close. We're well over a decade away from any meaningful penetration. And so, I urge folks to continue to put the pressure on Representative McClure to continue to work with us on this bill and all the stakeholders that are involved.
Thank you, Mr. Vandenbroek. Appreciate you coming to speak to us today. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for coming in. Could you tell us how this will negatively impact your industry?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it really comes down to what the final amendment is, right? So if you have a reduction off the retail rate of electricity and say, like I was explaining to some folks earlier today, if it's a sunny day and I'm producing electricity from solar and my house is now cooled from the AC and so my AC turns off, right, and I'm not using electricity and that electricity goes on the grid for, you know, an hour until my AC unit kicks back on, if I'm only compensated about 1/4 or 1/3 of the retail rate for that electricity at that time, and then 1 hour later, I am now paying the utility full retail rate for that electricity, that delta or that difference in revenue, if you want to think of it that way, that difference in savings will harm the payback period. And then that payback period becomes incredibly difficult for people to sell. If you're not selling as many projects, you don't have as many projects for people to build. So the demand in the marketplace will drop. Sorry, it's super wonky.
Thank you. Representative Oberdorf, you're recognized.
Just a quick question. You heard earlier, I'm sure, when I asked the bill presenter if this affects the municipal utilities, and you had mentioned all of your clients were municipal utilities, yet you're saying it's going to affect you. I mean, you said you're based within municipal utilities like Tallahassee, Gainesville, et cetera. How much of that percentage is really going to affect you then if, in fact, this bill doesn't apply to you?
You're recognized.
Sorry, maybe I wasn't clear. So I started working in solar in Tallahassee back 12 years ago. I live in Central Florida in Maitland. Most of our area is served by Duke Energy, Florida Power and Light. We do some OUC as well. Probably 80% of our customers are in investor-owned utility service territory, so it would be pretty impactful.
Thank you. Kevin Doyle, Consumer Energy Alliance of Florida. And following that, Katana Fernandez, our climate. Is Kevin Doyle here? I have that you would like to speak, Mr. Doyle. Waves in support. Beg your pardon. Katana Fernandez wishes to speak. You are recognized. You're our climate Florida field organizer. You are recognized.
Hi, my name is Katarina Fernandez. But thank you, Chair Stevenson, for your time. My name Katarina again, and I'm here on behalf of an organization called Our Climate. We help to educate and mobilize young people around intersectional climate justice policies and build a thriving world. So every day in my line of work, I'm working with students that are scared for their futures. I'm supposed to help them find their power and hope to fight for the future that they want, but also for the future of all Floridians. But truthfully, as someone from Miami, also called Ground Zero for Climate Change, I'm pretty scared too. My working class parents have invested all they have into building their lives in Miami. Their lifelong dream has been to buy a house in the city that I grew up in. And I hate that I have to be the person to tell them that there's a good chance that investment will be lost and that it'll all be washed away. In a place as much at risk as Florida, it is pivotal that we begin building a clean energy future. Floridians all over the state have too much to lose and everything to gain. We know that burning fossil fuels is warming the earth, which only puts us more at risk. A clean energy future is in our state's best interest, but instead, it's being proposed to make this clean energy future harder to achieve. By taking away incentives to solar, we would only be erasing the years of progress that have been made in our state. We're attacking the right of all people, especially working class families like mine, from exercising their energy freedom. We all deserve the right to choose where our energy comes from and to personally divest from fossil fuels if we want to. But the reality is that many of us cannot afford to do so without the help of policies like net metering.
Katania, I'm sorry, we're going to have to...
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm coming to the end now.
Thank you.
We young Floridians say, enough of having our choices robbed by these monopoly utilities. If we want Floridians to have a free and hopefully above ground future, then I urge you guys to vote no on HB 741. Thank you,
ma'am. Next, we have Charlotte Stewart-Tilley from the Clio Institute, who wishes to speak.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson, for your time. My name is Charlotte Stewart-Tilley. I am 16 years old. I live here in Tallahassee, and I work as a climate strategist for an organization called the Clio Institute. I'm here to ask you to oppose HB 741. Solar energy is a critical part of Florida's fight against the climate crisis, and this bill will kill Florida's private solar industry. While the effects of the climate crisis might feel far away, They're here already. I have friends in Miami who have seen flooding firsthand. Now that we know that hurricanes are worsening, imagine another Hurricane Michael, devastating our economy yet again. Even here in Tallahassee, pollen season has lengthened, creating anxiety for those of us with allergies or asthma. There's still time to do something, and here in Florida, we need to transition to renewable energy in a way that encourages everyday people to install solar. As your constituents, we rely on you to make decisions that could impact our future for generations to come.
Ms. Stewart-Tilley, you'll put...
Yes, of course.
Thank you.
I ask you to consider my future over the future of fossil fuels. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Celso Alfonso from Florida Power and Light is a proponent. I wish to appear in person, but I do not see anybody moving forward. Alex Rodriguez is a proponent from Florida Power and Light. Justine Iannotti is a proponent. These forms say I wish to appear in person, so I apologize. I don't know whether they want to speak or not. Theodore Hayes is a proponent and wishes to appear in person. Did you want to speak? Lisa Edgar wishes to speak and is a proponent. You are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee members, committee staff, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you. My name is Lisa Edgar. I'm here to make 3 points primarily, and I'll start off by telling you why I'm here. I was on the commission when we went into rulemaking. I voted on the rule. I heard the testimony. I've read the record. I've gone back over the past years and reread the entire record. I think I'm familiar with the issues and would like to speak to you about them. So 3 points. I do believe the rule is outdated. It was initiated in 2007. It was adopted in 2008. Since then, there have been a number of instances of changed circumstances. The technology has changed, the economics have changed, the market has changed. It's time, I believe, for us to look forward to have an energy policy that understands and takes into account what we've learned, where the technology is, and what we're looking forward to. Many new technologies are beginning to come online that we used to only dream about. Second, the rule does contain a subsidy. That was a conscious decision at the time as part of a compromise for a new program going forward and a new industry in this state. But the subsidy is a cost shift within a rate class. I also do believe that it is regressive. We have 1% of residential ratepayers in IOU territory that have rooftop solar. That means that the 99 other percent are subsidizing those costs, many of whom are elderly and quite frankly are not in a position to make a 20-year investment into their home. Third, I do believe that the rule should be amended and that it is the appropriate role of the legislature to direct the PSC to begin rulemaking, take in the information, look at it all, and make a change. PSC reports to the legislature. You are the policymakers. They are the economic regulators. And thank you so much. Glad to try to answer any questions.
Thank you. I appreciate you being here and respecting the time. I don't see any questions, but I really appreciate you coming and your testimony.
All right, if I could, just very briefly, I did write out some of my thoughts. If anybody would be interested in the sites or my rationale, if I could just hand it off and then maybe your staff could distribute. No thoughts?
Ms. Oberlink, if you would give it to the staff, we will distribute
it to all the members.
And anybody else who has not contacted us, you know, or the members can communicate also your details through the staff. Next, we have Meta Calder from the Florida League of Women Voters. You are recognized, and thank you for coming to our meeting.
Thank you. I'm a volunteer with the League. You're probably not aware that the Florida League of Women Voters and our local chapters have worked hard to bring rooftop solar to Florida. Since 2016, local leagues have helped launch 72 solar co-ops, with thousands of Florida home and business owners signing up to go solar through these co-ops. Current House Bill 741 would remove critical financial incentives for solar, for rooftop solar. Given the potential repercussions of this bill and the nature of many of the questions that I've been listening to today in the audience, we believe it's time for a Florida-specific study examining the economic value of rooftop solar and the financial impact of net metering in for our state, not sweeping and premature policy changes. I believe that many of the studies, and there have been many studies, apply to other states which have different packages of incentives in their states, not like Florida. With so many pocketbooks, businesses, jobs, and the environment at stake, we should be basing decisions on solid information and not unsubstantiated and self-interested claims. The League of Women Voters urges you to oppose this bill and instead call first for a study of the impact of net metering in Florida. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ross. I beg your pardon. I'm getting corrected here. Thank you, Ms. Calder. I appreciate that. And next we have Kim Ross from Rethink Energy Action Fund. And following that, we had Ed Oaksford.
Thanks, and I just want to point out that I think that happened to Jackson Oberlink, too. So my name is Kim Ross. Thank you for having me, Rethink Energy Action Fund. $65,305. That's the total payments made by Florida Power & Light to its rooftop customers for just under 24,000 systems. With 5.6 million customers, that means that the direct payout cost, it costs FPL ratepayers a single penny every year. The payout is what FPL gave customers for their excess energy beyond what they used, and they true it up at avoided costs. But the point is that it's very little money. Compare it, for instance, to the amount of money that they must have spent on Super Bowl ads. Meanwhile, customers just got an 18% rate increase, and on top of that, in 2021, they passed on an additional cost for gas of $1.1 billion because gas prices are through the roof. Many solar customers are low to middle income families. According to the Senate analysis of the bill, 33% of FPL's customers and 41% of Gulf customers with solar make under $50,000, and two-thirds make under $100,000. Rather than harming low-income customers, net metering is actually how low- to moderate-income customers get access. So if customers are subsidizing anything, it's not solar, it's not rooftop solar. It's more likely gas, which is 75% of our state's portfolio. There's nothing in this bill that guarantees lower rates for anyone. What we know it will do is it will, because we've seen it in places like Nevada, it will cut the mom-and-pop industry off at its knees right as it's getting started. I know you all support small businesses. And, okay, thanks. And I appreciate the bill's sponsor's willingness to look at solutions, but this bill is not the answer. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I'm going to go back and make sure that we called on Jackson Oberlink. We're doing something different with the papers here, and I apologize for skipping over you. Jackson Oberlink from the Clio Institute, Associate Program Manager, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair, for your time. My name is Jackson Oberlink, and I am here today speaking on behalf of the Clio Institute. So as you know, Florida is on the front lines of the climate crisis with sea level rise, extreme heat, intensifying natural disasters, failing infrastructure, and so much more. So it is absolutely critical that we transition to renewable energy as fast as possible. Luckily, here in the Sunshine State, we have no lack of access to one of the most powerful sources of clean energy, solar. And Florida has the opportunity to be leading the rest of the country by investing in our rooftop solar industry, creating thousands of good-paying jobs for all Floridians. However, our rooftop solar industry, while supporting thousands of jobs already, is still in its infancy in terms of market penetration compared to other states. And this legislation is way too far ahead of its time. So by passing HB 741, we would be stunting an upcoming and job-boosting industry before it can even reach maturity. Solar customers are not a burden to monopoly utility companies with the current net metering laws. The only thing that this bill would do would be to allow greedy utility companies to grow their monopoly and raise solar customers' utility bills. So by limiting our rooftop solar industry, it forces us to rely on utility solar fields, which eats up our agricultural lands. We need rooftop solar to make the transition to renewable energy sustainable for the agricultural industry as well.
That's a minute.
Thank you. And just to wrap up, net metering as it currently stands help people to uplift small businesses and entrepreneurs and boost our state's economy as well as helping to secure a safer and healthier future for all Floridians. I urge you to vote no on House Bill 741. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Oberlink. Next, we have Ed Oxford, Unitarian Universalist Justice, Florida.
Thank you. My name is Ed Oxford, and I speak on behalf of UU Justice Florida. Florida is facing important decisions as it addresses its energy challenges. Fortunately, we have a wealth of solar energy potential. Therefore, we need to encourage homeowners to install solar, not deter them. Our legislators and state government are obligated to make Florida more energy resilient, and homeowner solar is a vital element of homegrown energy resilience. Guided by our principles and the current energy situation in Florida, Unitarian Universalist Justice Florida, a statewide action network empowering citizens on issues of public concern, urges a no vote on HB 741.
Thank you, Mr. Oxford. Linda Oxford waves in opposition. Beth Alvey, Audubon, Florida, is an opponent and waves in opposition. Gina Givens wishes to speak. You are recognized, and she'll be followed by Linda Beauport. I'm sorry, hard to read the.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson, for your time. My name is Gina. I'm 21 years old, Florida State University student. This is my first time ever doing something like this, and I don't think I ever would if it wasn't something important to me. So on the sake of time, I'll try to be as fast as possible. As a child, I grew up feeling the summer months getting longer and watching the frost on my windows disappear over the years. The sand that I used to play in at the beach began to be erased by rising water from the oceans. I watched my family in South Florida become increasingly scared for their safety as hurricanes became more common and more deadly. These things are not coincidental and are a direct effect of the quickly changing climate. Mitigation strategies to combat climate change are a necessity in today's world, and without implementation of these tactics, I fear for my generation's future. I fear for the future of all of us in Florida. One of the most realistic and reliable mitigation strategies to assist in the fighting battle against climate change is the application of rooftop solar. Rooftop solar is a key part of the transition to renewable energy that this state, as has been mentioned before, the Sunshine State, would need for survival. Florida, being a coastal state, is on the front lines of the climate crisis. In 2019, tourism brought $26.7 billion to the state.
You need to bring it to a close, ma'am.
Okay. Net metering is not a problem that needs solving. Bills like this that are lobbied for and funded by monopoly utility companies do not have the best interest of Floridians' futures at heart.
Thank you, ma'am.
I urge you to vote against HB 741. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And is it Linda Beauport? B-E-A-U-P-O-R-T? Thank you. After that, we have Tyson Grinstead. We really need to move. We are really short on time. We have a bill in jeopardy at this point, members still need time to debate this bill. So.
Okay, thank you, Chair Stevenson. I'm just going to be brief, as you already heard about all the climate change consequences with solar. So I just wanted to make sure that it was important for all of you to know that this bill threatens to remove the energy freedoms that Floridians currently enjoy, and it's going to will destroy a booming industry in our state, considering we are the Sunshine State, and we will thrive on solar energy. And this legislation is just going to put up barriers for families and businesses who have accessed solar or are trying to access solar energy. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Tyson Grinstead wishes to speak. Following that, Richard Pinsky from Florida Solar Storage. You're recognized.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to again compliment Representative McClure
I'm from Sunrun, the nation's largest rooftop solar company. I've been involved in dozens of net metering conversations across the Southeast, and he's done a fantastic job bringing people to the table to have those conversations. That said, I do want to clear something up that's come up. There is a difference between cost and cost shifts. So cost can be investments. But, and to this point, what I want to be clear is that we have never measured the benefits in Florida of rooftop solar. And before something can be a cost shift, you have to measure cost, and you have to offset benefits and measure benefits. And I'm not talking about just climate change. I'm talking about reduced peak. I'm talking about reduced transmission and distribution costs, and many other benefits. And so South Carolina, where I'm from, before they made any adjustments to net metering, they measured those costs and benefits. Thank you all.
Richard Pinsky. We're going to have to reduce have to reduce the time to 30 seconds. I'm sorry.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to Representative McClure. This is an act relating to net metering. It's a rate structure component. And I would like to bring to your attention that what we're doing here today is actually putting our foot on the scale, not a tipping the scale, in four areas in the bill, which will favor utility rate income. The first is on line 28. And Madam Chair, I wish I had the time to go through this. We are in a monopoly. We don't have a market system in the state of Florida. I can't choose my supplier of electricity.
Thank you. And I appreciate it, and I look forward to getting your information. We will distribute it to the members who are eager to hear from you. Jerry Buechler, Treasure Coast Solar Corporation, followed by Ken Netman.
Not Corporation, Co-op. There's 92 homes that signed up in Toby Overdorf's area, Port St. Lucie. And if you look around, I'm sure you see a lot more solar. But basically, it's a whole myth. The fact that FPL only has 31,700 rooftop customers, that comes to 0.57% of their customers. What was just talked about, it's a net fuel loss. A year ago, I was compensated at 1.5 cents for every kilowatt I gave to FPL, which they turned around and sold at 12 cents. Right now, because of the fuel cost of methane gas, it's 2.5 cents. So that 2.5 cents I have a 4-bedroom, 3-bath house, electric car, and that excess, they sell it at 12 cents. I only get this year, we'll get 2.5 cents for that. So really, the fact is, this is a myth, the solar shift. We're avoiding expensive peaker powers during high consumption, sunny solar days. When they bring on these peaker pants that are really high. They have to buy
electricity from elsewhere. Ken Kniepman, Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If the current policy incentives around the adoption of solar energy exist in Florida, and I think we all could. I think we can all agree at this point that the current net metering does. I think HB 741 will effectively end that. I appreciate the sponsor's open door on this issue, and I look forward to the amended language. As it stands, we believe that there is a balance between supporting solar growth and supporting the utility infrastructure that we all depend on. In its current form, we believe the bill has not yet found that balance. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Silvestri. You're recognized. Okay. I'm for the Mr. Kniepman. Richard Silvestri, you're recognized.
Okay, you're not going to give me enough time to talk about this stuff. It took more time for me to put the socks in my suitcase down in Fort Pierce, and you're going to give me to talk. No sense giving you any facts, because you're not going to listen, because I can't really tell you what I want to present. I'm 78 years old. I put in rooftop solar 6 years ago. My wife, 2 years younger than me, we knew we would not recoup the value. We did it because it was the right thing to do to save our grandkids, our great-grandkids, all these young people from Cleo, okay? Those kind of people, all right? excuse me if I sound excited, because I'm excited. You know, this is ridiculous what they're doing. This is baloney. Just look at your figures. Why don't you put this on hold and vote on something that is correct instead of voting this halfway measure that means nothing. Except to people. I don't care about me.
Thank you.
I care about the solar industry and these young people coming up and the people working in that. That's what I care about.
Thank you, Representative. Okay? Thank you, Mr. Silvestri. Next, we have Anna Grace Lewis, Florida Chamber of Commerce, who waves in support. Lakey Love, who wishes to appear but is an opponent. I don't see anybody moving forward to speak. Jacob Humphreys wishes to appear in person and is approaching. You are recognized. Representing Meraki.
I'm with Meraki Solar. I've had 7 years in the industry. Meraki provides jobs for 700 Floridians currently. I could easily go on about the devastating impact it would be to my company and the industry in general, but I want to focus on two specific details that greatly affect the homeowners, both those with solar and those looking to purchase solar for their homes. The first, I propose the grandfathering term of 20 years be extended to 25 years. We have 4,730 customers with 25-year loans currently. Last year, 85% of customers chose 25-year loans. Based on large utility companies in other states, the calculated avoided cost is typically a fourth of the retail rate, if not less. This means a homeowner would have to produce four times as much solar.
Thank you, sir. Others. We've had to reduce the time further. Please communicate with us so we can provide your testimony. Katie Ottenweiler, you are recognized. I wish to appear in person, it says, and she wishes to speak. You're recognized.
Katie Childs Ottenweiler with Vote Solar. One thing that I want to point out, the $100 million that we've talked about in terms of the cost shift, our organization absolutely rebuts that number. For one, when a utility is making record profits and customers lower their electric bills through solar, sometimes that doesn't mean those costs get shifted to other customers. Sometimes it means the utility just makes a few less record profits, and that is absolutely what we're seeing here in Florida. There's a reason that NAACP is opposing this bill. A vast majority of the customers who are going solar are making under $100,000, and almost half of them are making under $50,000, a household. That's because of leasing.
That's 43 seconds, ma'am.
Utilities who are doing community solar, they have low-income carve-outs. And if we are going to move in a glide path, we should absolutely be looking at giving low-income customers a longer chance to benefit from.
Thank you. Next up, I have Walter Liebrick, who wishes to appear and is an opponent, followed by Evelyn Fern. You're recognized.
Thank you for allowing me to speak today. My name is Walter Liebrick. I would like to speak directly to the point of the cross-subsidization in the bill. The entire premise of this bill is founded on this cross-subsidization. But when you look at the legislative bill analysis, which is the only tool that you people as legislators have to look at what factual evidence is out there, there's nothing in here about cross-subsidization. The entire legislative bill analysis, there's one line. It says concerns of cross-subsidization who protected net metering by not net metering customers have been raised by the PSC. That's it. Where's the numbers at? Vote no. Thank you.
Thank you. Evelyn Fern? I see. Oh, hello, Evelyn. How are you this afternoon? You're recognized.
Hi, my name is Fern. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. My family went solar about a year ago, and I love solar because my house is powered by the sun. And this is important to me because solar reduces our carbon dioxide footprint, which is good for our future. Please vote no on House Bill 741. Thank you.
Thank you for being here, Fern. Next, I have Raphael Collins. Good afternoon, Raphael. You're recognized. Next would be Julia Pryor.
Thank you for allowing me to speak today. First off, in my opinion, solar energy is more efficient and cleaner for the air. Second, solar panels might be better for families who want to save on their electrical bill. That is why I think more people should be using solar energy and why you should not pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Julia Pryor from Good Leap, followed by Dylan Powell.
Yes, Julia Piper with Good Leap. We are a financing company. We work with over 100 solar installers and contractors here in the state of Florida and serve tens of thousands of customers. We would oppose the bill as it's currently presented today, but really do appreciate the work that Representative McClure is doing on supporting a glide path. That's what businesses need for certainty and to invest more in the state of Florida. We work with large financial institutions who support the businesses here, and having that glide path gives the certainty. Also, for the sake of customers, would encourage no retroactive changes or changes to keep consistent rates for the customers who do make that investment in their homes. That's very pivotal to us. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Dylan Powell, followed by David Cullen. You are recognized.
Thank you. Just one small comment about the bill as written today. The grandfathering takes effect for customers whose systems are turned on by January 1st of 2023. I just want you guys to be aware that a system could take 9 months from sell to being operational. So there's a large chance that you're going to have a huge number of customers who choose to go solar that won't be able to have their system installed before the grandfathering cutoff.
Thank you very much. Stephen Rutherford, you are recognized, and you'll be followed by Brendan Draper.
I'm sorry,
Mr. Beg your pardon?
Madam Chair, I'm David
Cullen. David Cullen. I'm sorry, I got one ahead of myself again. Thank you. Sierra Club, you are recognized.
I thought I took the wrong toll booth lane again. Dave Cullen for Sierra Club, Florida. Thanks for the time. I will be very brief. And also thank you to Representative McClure for the time that he's given me. But we believe this bill, as drafted, even with the 20-year grandfathering, will kill new net metering. The average person won't be able to get a fair price because this bill will rip the guts out of their return on investment. Not only that, but it ensures that millions of roofs in Florida will be wasted as sites for solar panels. Houses are already on developed land and on impermeable surfaces.
Thank you,
sir. The perfect place to put solar.
All right.
Solar should be easier to access, not harder. Please vote no on the bill.
Thank you. Brent.
Madam Chair.
Stephen Rutherford.
Commander Steve Rutherford, U.S. Navy retired. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. I'm also the owner of Tampa Bay Solar and been so for the last 12 years. I've spoken with Representative McClure about this. He's been gracious with his time. We spent more than 2 hours almost in his office discussing this at length. On behalf of the veterans, nearly 4,000 in this state alone, I'm asking you to oppose this bill. So if you need an example, look at the city of Lakeland, who's Lakeland Electric. They have the worst net metering policy in the state, and I have two customers of the 1,000 that I have customers in that area. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, I have Brendan Draper. He'll be followed by Jonathan Weber.
Yes, thank you for your time. My name is Brendan Draper. I'm the operations director at IGT Solar, which installs and services solar and battery backup systems. I'm speaking in opposition to HB 741. I believe this legislation before you is based on inaccurate information brought to you by FPL. However, I'll focus my comments on the effect your vote will have on me, my family, the company I work for, and our customers. The men, women, and veterans that work with me know their jobs are at risk based on your vote. If you vote for this bill, you threaten my company's business and you threaten the jobs of the men and women that work for our future every day. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Weber. Mr. Draper, I beg your pardon. Jonathan Weber, you are recognized.
Thank you so much. Jonathan Weber, Deputy Director of Florida Conservation Voters. So the cost shift argument behind this bill doesn't work. We know that because Duke Energy testified in South Carolina stating that solar customers are actually cheaper to serve since most of their power gets generated on-site and stays in their neighborhood. There have never been any findings by the Florida Public Service Commission about whether solar customers pay more or less than the utilities cost to serve them. And to be clear, the average monthly electric bill of a solar customer is still about $88 a month. If you're thinking to yourself, gosh, this is really confusing and technical process, maybe the Public Service Commission should hold a workshop on this issue, you're in luck. The PSC actually held a workshop on this very issue less than a year and a half ago, and the result, they declined to change net metering rule. To clarify, we are
Thank
not-
Thank you, sir, that's 41 seconds. Thank okay. you.
Thanks.
Sorry, I'm, yeah. please, I would urge you, we have gotten thousands of form letters and it's difficult to get the substantive testimony. I urge you to contact through the staff and we will distribute your comments. Thank you. Josh Kearns is an opponent and wishes to appear in person. Green Tech, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representatives. I'll be as brief as possible. I'm here in support of the 175 Green Tech families that we have, half of which I've personally hired. 9,000 solar employees and over 40,000 across the state, all opposing this bill. To Representative Campbell's question earlier, you know, we will be laying people off if this bill passes as is. You know, Representative McClure has been very respective, but the glide path hasn't been shown yet. So as of the way the bill is right now, I just urge you to vote no against it.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Ann Vanek-Dasevich, Solar and Energy Loan Fund, wishes to appear. You are recognized, and you'll be followed by Kent Wimmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ann Vanek-Dasevich. I'm the COO of the Solar and Energy Loan Fund itself. It is not a PACE company. We are a little nonprofit out of St. Lucie. And what we do is we level the playing field for financing for low to moderate income families. And yes, we do have clients that have solar on their homes. So we oppose this bill because not only will it hurt Florida families, but it will also hurt Florida contractors in the emerging solar market. And with that, thank you.
Thank you. Kent Wimmer, a homeowner with a photovoltaic system, you are recognized.
Hello, I am Kent Wimmer. I'm a homeowner with a PV system installed in my home. I'm asking you to please oppose HB 741. This bill directs the PSC to establish unfair rate structures for its customers. Why would customers who reduce their consumption by similar amounts, whether they're using solar panels or by adjusting their thermostats, insulating their homes, installing new windows, or buying new energy conservation appliances, be charged different rates when their net impact to the grid remains the same?
Thank you, sir.
And the last thing is, I am here because I want the local business that installed and
thank you, sir. Gustavo Panasso, Solcium Solar. Please be, we have quite a few speakers. So
yes, ma'am. Thank you for having me. Real quick, my name is Gustavo Panasso. I am the co-owner of Solcium Solar. We're based in Seminole County and started in March of 2020. This bill would kill my business today. It would have far-reaching consequences. I would have to lay off my nearly 50 employees almost immediately. Mine and my business partner's nearly $800,000 investment would evaporate. It would be financially devastating right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Direct and to the point. Thomas Brule, Mast Academy Green Champions, you're recognized. I see no one moving forward. Oh, I see. Followed by David Bessett. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Thomas Brule. I'm a senior at Mast Academy, a marine stewardship and STEM-themed school. Our students convinced our board to pass a resolution for 100% clean energy by 2030. Last year, I circulated a petition to allow for power purchase agreements on school rooftops. With no upfront costs or costs to taxpayers, schools could lease their rooftops to solar installers to generate power for schools. Please do not pass this bill,
sir,
which will prevent our school district.
You need to bring it to a close, sir.
Please do not pass this bill, which will prevent our school district from saving $100 million by 2030 and deny our students the opportunity to see clean technology working in their school sites. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brule. David Bessett, Solar Industries, you're recognized.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Dave Bessett. I installed my first solar unit in 1979. I've been in this industry for 43 years. It could devastate my business and other businesses like mine for solar contracting, as the bill is written today. I ask you all to vote no.
Thank you. Next we have Michelle Drucker, Miami-Dade County PTA, PTSA Environmental Chair and Vice Chair of MDCPS 100% Clean Energy. You are recognized.
Good afternoon, thank you. I had a speech, but let me tell you what this is about. This bill is about schools. Our district passed a resolution for 100% clean energy. We had a task force of 30 members, including our county resiliency officer, and FP&L attended those public meetings. Fast forward 7 months later, this bill, they're not worried about the less than 1% solar. They're worried about schools catching on, using their rooftops to generate clean energy. And if all the schools did it, everyone pays for schools. That's the real subsidy. And if you don't, you need to kill this bill or at least carve out an exception for schools. Our schools need to use their roofs for clean energy. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Drucker. Maximo Borges, Palmetto Elementary School, you are recognized. followed by Jim Puricell, SunPower Corporation.
Good morning, committee members. Thank you for letting me speak today. My name is Marcel Borges, and live with my parents and little brother in Miami, Florida. My brother, Maximo, wanted to be here with us today, but he broke his arm on Saturday. I'm doing this alone, but I'm speaking for the both of us. My teacher tells me that the climate crisis will be our problem, so I ask you to help me today. Please stop this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, we have Jim Puricell from SunPower, followed by Marcel Borges. Jim Puricell waves in opposition. Marcel Borges. Oh, sorry, I beg your pardon. You are speaking for Maximo. I got it. Okay. George Cavro, Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. You are recognized.
Thank you, Chair, committee members. George Cavros on behalf of Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. There isn't a lot I can tell you in 30 seconds, but I can tell you that we oppose the bill. It's predicated on the myth that solar customers in Florida right now are raising bills on non-Florida customers. And I can tell you that's nonsense. It's utter nonsense. Be careful here, committee members. You're wading into very technical and complex rate-making matters that can't be addressed in a 60-day session. These are matters where the facts need to be established, and there has to be a deep dive, a deep analysis done on the costs and benefits of distributed solar on the utility system. That has not been done here. And I know there were comments here that said the PSC has looked at that. No, the PSC has not made any determination about the costs and benefits of solar. I ask you to vote no. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I appreciate your patience as we go through those quickly. We want to make sure everybody had a chance to speak. Next, we are in debate, members. Is there anyone who wishes to debate the bill? Representative Fabricio, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Representative, for bringing this good bill. I believe that the rooftop solar is a wonderful thing. I think it's important in Florida. But I think it needs to be driven by the market, by market needs, and the ability for folks to be able to go out there and get it on their own. Right now, what I'm hearing is that 0.08% of residents have rooftop solar. That's not a whole lot. It's not financially viable just yet. But the good news, and what I'm excited about, is the fact that the technology is getting better, and the market's going to improve, and the general market forces will bring it to Florida. And folks in Florida will go out and buy it. I think this is a good bill. I'm encouraged by the fact that the sponsor is working with all the stakeholders. I understand that there is going to be a version with a glide path coming forth. I think it's a good bill. I support and I urge you all to support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Campbell, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for presenting this, Representative, and I'll make sure that I don't say solar system this time. My concerns have been around just what I'm understanding with the net metering and just hearing the commentary and the concerns of individuals that came to my office, talked to me on both sides, and I appreciate those conversations. If this is a bill that is the ramifications of it is going to have people lose their jobs, then I'm quite concerned. And so I definitely would be interested to understand or hear the amendment that you're adding on to this bill. And so for that, for right now, I am going to vote down on this bill.
Thank you. Representative Henson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for saying my name correctly. I do want to start by saying my son went to Palmetto Elementary, young man, and I really appreciate all the young people that are here. I love young people. Net metering and tax rebates were financial incentives that went along with encouraging the solar industry. I don't believe, being in the Sunshine State, that we have moved to the place where we ought to be. I believe we should be the leaders of solar energy, because we are the Sunshine State, and we should be moving away from fossil fuels. We can ill afford to guess at whether or not net metering is costing non-solar customers or vice versa. we absolutely need to know if your GLAD path forward will impact anyone, the energy industry, the customers, anyone. And so for that reason, I think we do need a study. I said that up front. If the PSC has done a study, if PSC does not want to do a study, we need to launch an OPAGA study. We have the ability to do that within the legislature. I also made a proposal for an energy equity task force, which if that bill had moved, they could assist in this effort, at least working with customers and working with communities to help us understand what's happening with solar energy and how to move it forward. I hope we can advance it. I hope we can find ways to advance it. But at this point, I think we need a study so we know what the heck we're talking about. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Ranking Member Goff-Marcel, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am very excited to see all this interest in solar energy. When I decided to run for office, that was one of my platforms, is to we're the Sunshine State. We should be the leaders in solar energy. I'm very, very excited about that. And I do think we definitely should be thinking about policy right now, because this obviously is going to be the new industry, and we have to figure out how we're going to switch over. But it's really premature to be talking about it when we're only at 0.8% penetration, and California was dealing with 15%. And we know that we don't have to worry about that until we get to over 10%. But, yes, we should be thinking about it and trying to figure out the policy. But this isn't it. And I'm also not okay with the grandfathering in, because I don't think that only the people that have invested or were able to invest right now, which should be the ones that should benefit, also people that want to benefit now and in the future, they should also have the incentive of trying to put solar panels on their house. So for all those reasons, I'm down on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ranking Member. Representative McCurdy, Representative, and then, okay, go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Be very brief. Representative McCurdy, thanks for bringing the bill, man. But I've never sold solar, but I have sold used cars before. And when I sold cars as is, I was selling that car with all the issues, whether known or unknown. And so today I have to vote on this bill as is. And that's without the amendment that we spoke about earlier. So with that, I'll have to vote down on the bill today. But I did want to explain my rationale. Hopefully before we see it on the floor again, we do have that compromise worked out with all interested parties. Thank you.
Representative Robinson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And this, didn't think it would be this difficult, but it really is, because my concerns come with the everyday person. And so I'm very concerned because I believe in clean energy. I know that we must do something to work with our environment, and solar is a good way to do that. I guess I go back to the study. I really encourage, or I think that we do need to have a study, because we need to base our information. I tried to do some research, and I read a couple of articles, so I was familiar with what happened in California, which I don't want to happen here. But I do need to know, you know, are we sure it's going to happen, or look at actually some data here in Florida. So I would like to work with you on that and see where we are. The major concern for me is the subsidiaries that people, and I think was mentioned before, renters, you know, they don't, you know, they might be affected in this. So I want to see, you know, how those amendments you're talking about actually putting on will work. So I look forward to talking to you and seeing how that's going to play out, because all of those things are important for me.
Thank you, Representative Robinson. Representative Fisher, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, thank you for bringing this bill forward. You know, it's had some discussion over the years, but there's not been substantive legislation here since, 2008? And so the fact that we've kind of waited this long to address it, I'm glad that we're doing that. The PSC is an arm of the legislature, and I think people sometimes treat it as completely and wholly separate bodies, that just like some of the other OPAGA and other things. Those are arms of the legislature. This is really directing the PSC some of our policy positions and directing them to look into it. So I think that that's one point I would make, that the PSC is an arm of the legislature. They're not totally separate from us. They are a part of our action. And so I think us telling them what our preferences here are and to have them look into this, I think is really important. The other thing I would bring up is something that there's been some testimony on, and one of my colleagues actually just talked about the everyday person or the forgotten man or woman, or is kind of how I've used it in the past. But this issue, utilities are generally considered a regressive tax, which means that the lowest income people end up paying the highest share of their income in order to pay for something. So this is a cost shift. It is a benefit to people who are largely well off. And I think it's an important public policy area for us as legislators to consider when we're making decisions about incentives or subsidies or these things. Who are the beneficiaries? And overwhelmingly, the beneficiaries of the status quo, the way it's currently written in law, are higher income earners. And so this bill sets to get rid of some of that cost shift. This bill puts our incentives in the right place to say everybody should be treated equally here. There shouldn't be a burden, a cost shift from higher income people to lower income people. The lower income people shouldn't pay the lion's share of it. And so I appreciate you bringing this bill forward today. I plan to support the everyday person with my vote and voting for the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. Representative Overdorf, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Well, I may agree with many of the things that Representative Fisher just said today. I'm really reviewing this in the context of the committee that we all sit on, which is an appropriations committee, and the basically the financial policies associated with how it affects the state, and that appropriation money, if you will, and the fact that this really has no fiscal impact on the state, according to our review, with and that the PSC is going to be looking at this and reviewing it. So on an appropriations, a financial, a fiscal side, I don't see the impact for that. I'll be voting up in this committee today. I look forward to seeing your amendment as it moves forward, and we'll see what the policy brings within the next committee. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Overdorf. I see no further debate. I'm just going to say I believe that Representative Overdorf is correct. I mean, one of the reasons we're not considering the more fleshed out bill is there is, in my review, no fiscal to the state and local government. There was questions about commercial rooftop, comments from schools about commercial rooftop. I'm not sure if this bill covers that. I've also read that in 2025, rooftop, solar, and battery will be very competitive. So we're a very short reach to a new era that will give prosperity and opportunity to people and address some of the pricing concerns. And in my community, much of the affordable housing is in older communities, communities that are overseen by HOAs and property owners associations, roofs, people with steep pitch roofs, and tree shady shade-oriented communities where there's also sometimes restrictions from tree trimming. So solar access and the pricing of solar is very important. That our older and existing housing stock is protected from an unfair cost shift. And I'm an accountant, and I haven't been through all the PSC rules, but it would be my understanding that at full retail, at some level, it would have a cost shift, and the industry will become larger, and at some point you're hitting a wall. I think a glide path is wise. I support this bill. I believe that Representative McClure has worked very hard on this bill, and I look forward to voting for it and seeing what comes next. You're recognized to close.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll try and be brief, but I do want to address some of the things we heard in public testimony and then also during debate. The first thing here is no one is saying you can't buy rooftop solar. Far from it. What we're saying, and we're not even saying on a one-to-one credit that you can't be made whole for what you produce. On the excess credits, though, I would have to ask the rooftop solar folks, why do they think that what they are generating should be compensated at a higher rate than if the utility purchased it from a solar farm on a monthly basis. That doesn't make any sense to me. What is so extraordinary about the rooftop solar energy as opposed to a solar farm? Some folks came up, and you have to kind of get into the details here on, they say, well, it was only a few $100 at the end of the year. But not on the monthly credit, not month over month. As it relates to green energy, the utilities have a mandate to provide. I could speculate and argue that not 1 kilowatt hour of fossil fuel burning electricity has been saved as a function of rooftop solar. Because at the end of the day, the utilities must have the energy available to service their ratepayers. So we have a glide path. We're going to allow rooftop solar to adjust here over this period. They are certainly, to Chair Stevenson's point, I think on the cusp of battery storage, where they can produce and then hold their power, and that'll certainly be a game changer. But let's be very clear. It is not at a price point or a capacity today that makes any sense. And so we're going to build a bridge between where we're at today and that time via a glide path. But for the 99% of ratepayers that have no idea what would happen to their electric bills if we don't contemplate this over the next few years, that's what this bill is about. I appreciate everyone coming. I appreciate all of the stakeholder meetings we've had. It has helped shape a product that I think will build that bridge. But there are a whole bunch of Floridians that have no idea what the cost shift will mean to them down the road. And those are the folks that I would ask you to think about as you cast your vote. And with that, I close, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative McClure, having closed on his bill, Michelle, will you please call the roll on CS for House Bill 741.
Chair Stevenson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Maggard?
Yes.
Ranking Member Golf Marcio?
No.
Representatives Barrero?
Yes.
Campbell?
No.
Dugan?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fisher?
Yes.
Gilombardo?
Yes.
Henson?
No.
McCurdy?
No.
Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Robinson?
No.
Sabatini?
No.
10 yeas, 5 nays.
Members, by your vote, will show CS for House Bill 741 reported favorably. Next up, we have House Bill 1269, paramutual wagering, by Representative Daly. Representative Daly, you are recognized to present your bill. Well, want to just wait? We still have another bill to hear, so thank you for exiting quietly.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and good afternoon, committee members. And many of you know, I got here a little while ago from Jacksonville, so I appreciate you having me and hearing this very, very good bill. Members, as you may recall, during special session, we chose to decouple standard bred racing, basically saying that a paramutual provider was no longer required to have harness racing. We kept thoroughbred racing coupled, but decoupled standard breds and highlight and quarter horses. But in doing so, what we also did, and I think this was an unintended consequence, was foreclosed any opportunity for that industry, and I'm talking about the standard bred industry, to race at all. No new permits can be issued. No transfers can be conducted of existing permits. You've heard me, many of you have heard me talk about this issue a lot over the last year, year and a half. Standard bred or harness racing has a long history in Florida.
Excuse me just 1 minute.
Yes, ma'am.
Please take your conversations outside the chamber. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was concerned. I thought half the room was here for me. So standard bred racing has a long history in Florida with over 10,000 Floridians in this storied Florida agricultural industry. This bill simply gives the existing permit holders the opportunity to offer standard bred racing in this state. And that is the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Are there, first, there's no amendments, correct? Okay. Are there any questions? I see no questions. Is there public testimony? No public testimony. Yes. Oh, yes, we do have public testimony. Lauren Jackson. Oh, the Florida Standard Bred Breeders Owners and Association waves in support, representing them, waves in support. All right. That was public testimony. Is there debate? You're recognized, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to commend you, Rep. Daly, for your advocacy on this. I remember how passionately you spoke about it during special session. I know this is near and dear to your heart, and I applaud you for converting that into action.
Thank you. I don't know if any of the other members. I don't see anybody else in debate. Representative Henson, you are recognized.
I'll just close out. Thank you, Madam Chair, by saying you educated us very well during special session. I have no questions nor debate. I just wanted to commend you for being passionate enough to stay at it for your 10,000. I believe you said 10,000 workers in the field. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Fisher, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I look forward to hearing about the conversation that you might have had back in Jacksonville related to this bill. What I would say is I plan to support the bill today. I know we've talked about it in the past, especially when we had the special session over the gambling issue. And since vacation rentals may not go through this year, maybe we can rename this one the Dan Daly Act of 2022.
Thank you. I see no further debate, but I will add my own to thank you. If you would like to maybe in your close talk about what this means to you and your family, I appreciate it. And I remember you were a strong advocate. Just as we heard on the prior bill, people build their lives around certain activities, and I've worked in with and around horses for a number of years, and I appreciate the opportunity that it gave me as a young person. And I say this about historic resources and, well, in this case, horses. It really helps sometimes think like the older buildings need a job, and so do horses to make sure they have their upkeep. So you're recognized to close.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and first and foremost, thank you for agreeing to hear this bill. And committee members, thank you very much for your kind words. It really means a lot. You all know I come from a standard bred racing family, so I know this industry. I know these people. I grew up with these people. You've heard me speak about this industry at length. These are salt of the earth men and women who just want to race their horses and raise their kids. They're not political. They want to be able to operate in this great state. And we should give them the opportunity to do so. And Madam Chair, if I may, I'd like to share a brief story that I shared at the last committee meeting. So I went home a couple weeks ago and spent some time with my family, and Dad asked if I could help at the barn, of course. So I did, and we were jogging horses out there together, and he had gotten off, and somebody came up next to me, a gentleman I hadn't met, and he goes, are you Dan Daly's boy? My dad's the same name. And I said, yes, sir, I am. He goes, you're like a state ambassador or something. Yes, sir. He goes, well, I really hope you're successful in saving standard bred racing in this state. I said, I appreciate that, sir, very much. He goes, I moved here in 1981 with my family for standard bred racing. And I have news for you. I'm not getting out of this business. It's been my entire life, but I'm going to have to leave my home if you're not. That's what you're dealing with, members. That's what you're dealing with, an entire industry that has basically just had the door shut on them. So I appreciate you letting me rant about this on and on and on, because it's so very important, and I appreciate your consideration and your support. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Daly, having closed on House Bill 1269, Michelle, will you please call the roll on the bill?
Chair Stevenson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Maggard?
Yes.
Ranking Member Goff-Marcio?
Yes.
Representatives Barrero?
No.
Campbell?
Yes.
Dugan?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fisher?
Yes.
Gilombardo?
Yes.
Henson?
Yes.
McCurdy?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Robinson?
Yes.
Sabatini?
Yes.
14 yeas, 1 nay.
Thank you, members. By your vote, we'll show this bill reported favorably. Thank you, Representative Daly. And members, before you get away, This does conclude our committee agenda. This is likely our last meeting, and I wanted to thank our staff who work on a year-round basis, Bruce Topp, Michelle Sampson, Caleb Helpling, Michelle Mullins, and Chris Lee, as well as the extra people who come in and help us from time to time because of the wide range of issues that we cover. I am really grateful for their efforts. I'm really grateful for the discussion we have on hard bills like this one today, and that's how bills get better. And seeing no further business before the committee, Representative Fisher moves we rise. Without objection, we are adjourned.